This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard entitled The Four Conditions of Existence, Part 4. This lecture was given on the 23rd of July, 1954 in Phoenix, Arizona, USA.
At the 7th American Advanced Clinical Course.
It is a one-half-hour lecture.
This is a free zone revised rendition based on the professional course 305, Side B, and amended for completion from a Golden Era Productions cassette tape from the Phoenix Lectures tape set.
This morning I'd like to talk to you about the various reasons why. We have a lot to do with reasons why, in spite of the fact that a fellow who goes around all the time finding reasons why is usually not in particularly good shape. But there are a lot of reasons why the states of existence and conditions of existence are put together the way they are put together. If they weren't put together in this outrageous fashion, that as isness followed by alter isness gives us isness, followed by an alter isness, of course, or desire to, which brings us into not isness, and which then brings us into alter isness, which brings us into not isness, which brings us into alter isness, which brings us into not isness. There's a good reason for all this, an excellent reason for all this. I'm talking to you right now about the fundamental of all aberration, which is incidentally the fundamental of all existence. There is a very, very strange condition here. If a Thetan were to remain with an as-isness, he would thereafter have nothing. You see, a perfect duplication of the as-isness would cause the as-isness to disappear. Therefore, immediately after the postulation of some object, it is necessary by mechanics, and it just happens to be so in this universe, it isn't reasonable. It's not reasonable. It's just the way it is in this universe. Therefore, right in the field of mechanics, we get the fact that the as-isness must immediately be altered in order to become what we call a reality. And thus, people attempt various mechanisms. One of those mechanisms is the device of God. That we're not saying now that there is not a God and all that sort of thing. But if there were never any type of alter ego of this character, there wouldn't be any permanent reality. Now, it's one thing for there to be a God and quite another thing for everybody to blame everything on him. Barbaric manifestation that we have generally includes a deity. The savage out in the Gullaby Isles is practicing this. He says it's the fault is the trees and the river sprite and so forth. I'm talking to you now about the mechanism of use of rather than the identity of when I mention God, all right? God, then, is to blame. If we make something and have some hard luck, something like that, the way it looks to us here at this stage of development, we can then say, well, God did it to us and he has afflicted us and so forth. Well, quite in addition to that, every primitive people has the legend of a creator. They have to have a legend of a creator, otherwise they would never have anything. The immediate and intimate use of the legend of the creator is to continue in existence. Whether you build it or not, you can cause something to vanish simply by looking at it as it is. Whether you build it or not. Somebody else can put up a mock-up of some kind or another, and merely by your perceiving it and making a perfect duplicate of it, you can vanish it. It is not necessary that you exclusively devote yourself to the vanishment of those things which you yourself have made. That is not necessary in order to carry through this cycle. Somebody else could have made it, and you could have made a perfect duplicate of it, an as-isness, in other words, and it would have vanished. Now, we're talking about something which is very, very easy to work with. We're talking about something which can be subjected to objective proof. I can ask you to make a perfect duplicate of something, which is to say, get it in the same space, same time continuum, using the same mask, and your perfect duplicate will cause it first, probably, if you're having a hard time of it, to brighten up, and then it'll fade. The next thing you know, even though you've made very poor perfect duplicates, you sort of get the idea of looking through this item. And so it is with all of existence. Unless, in other words, there was a legend of other creation than your own, you would not at any time be able to have anything. The first and most fundamental principle of havingness is it must have been created by somebody else, and thus we get business. Now, when you ask a person to remedy his own havingness, this is perfectly all right. You're asking him to make nothing of something. He actually can, but the reason it does him so much good is he's forgotten that he can. You ask him to mock something up and pull it in. In other words, you ask him to mock it up and alter it. Why doesn't it remedy a person's havingness simply to mock something up? Just get a mock-up. That doesn't remedy a person's havingness. Well, it doesn't remedy his havingness because if he leaves it there, it'll simply disappear. And there's many a preclear gets very upset because his mock-ups all disappear. He puts up mock-up and it disappears. Well, that's because he doesn't alter it in position. He puts the mock-up up, and right where it is, he leaves it there, and of course it dissipates and disappears. Now, those preclears that put up a mock-up and leave it in the same place, which does not disappear, are working on a machine which does their mock-ups for them, and for which machine they have no responsibility. You see that? If you ever get a preclear whose mock-ups persist exactly where he put them, you're working with somebody who's doing mock-ups with a machine. And he's doing them with a machine not because he's crazy, but because this is the only possible way he could make them to persist. The machine changes them, and he himself knows that he did not put up the mock-up. He knows this. If he didn't know that, the mock-up again would disappear. So it is not a very undercover fact with which we are working. All right, let's take this legend of the Creator and discover that it is quite uniform. It is found in every savage tribe. It is found across the face of the world, and it is found throughout this universe, the legend of the Creator. Very well, we can say there was a Creator, and he created everything, and that's fine. Well, if this were the case, why, that's fine, too, because it wouldn't unmock. In other words, things would not disappear if there were a Creator who made everything. You could even use this as a tremendous argument to prove that there was such a thing as a Creator, and he made everything, just by the fact that it's here. And if you had made it and continued to accept your responsibility for it, it wouldn't be here. So there must have been a Creator. You could go at it with this type of logic. However, it works this way. If somebody else, other than yourself, made a mass of energy, all you would have to do would be to come along and fish around for its approximate moment of creation and duplicate it. And it would then disappear. So whether the Creator created everything or not, it's a certainty that you, in order to continue with a physical universe, have to some degree, lay the blame on some other identity and say, therefore, this postulate, whether he created it or you created it, does not enter the question at all. If you duplicated it, it would go away, you see, regardless of who created it. This happens to be not too easily subjectable to proof, but we're talking now about a very basic fundamental. And it is necessary for you to carry around the postulate that somebody else created it in order for it to exist. Now, it's a little bit difficult to prove this. You have to work with a preclear for a short time. But the main difficulty of proof, which lies on this track, the main difficulty of proof is simply proving who made the mock-up in the first place. You see, if it disappeared because you duplicated it, well, then you probably made it. But it doesn't matter then whether we use this one way or the other. We don't have to admit that you could make anything disappear, whether you made it or not. We don't have to admit that to continue along with this proof. What we are coming down on here is this matter of responsibility. Now, we learned in Dianetics the fact that people would not accept responsibility for their own acts. And actually, they're as bad off as they will not accept responsibility for their own acts. And everything is other determined to the degree that they will not accept such responsibility. As a matter of fact, you can cover a complete dianometry, scientometry, anything you want to call it, a complete set of tests which will demonstrate that there is a direct ratio between the health and ability of the person and his willingness to accept responsibility. But the funny part of it is that only goes up to a certain point. And when you achieve that point of acceptance of responsibility, havingness as such and the universe or that part of one's interest in the universe would vanish. Now, here is the Bodhi. Here is the individual who aspires to the attainment of perfect serenity. He can't have perfect serenity and have something because he'd have to give away a certain amount of his responsibility in order to continue it in existence. You see that? Just havingness would only persist so long as he felt somebody else had had a hand in creating it. You see that? And the moment he said, I created this 100% all the way along the line, he wouldn't have a thing. You see that? The perfect duplicate here is what we're looking at again. So therefore, the condition of becoming a Bodhi is the condition of having nothing. Well, now, a Thetan is very able to have something or nothing at will. But it happens and that he is appealed to very often on the basis that all somethingnesses, including space, would vanish. He thinks this might be a good thing. The only protest a Thetan has, actually, is somethingness. And if you want to say, what is wrong with a Thetan, you say somethingness, and you have stated it. He has something. There is something in existence. He is perfectly willing to have many somethings, but after a while, the communication formula comes into effect, and he becomes frantic about it. Now we are talking about something terribly elementary, in spite of the fact that it is deeply pervasive as it is in life and existence. It is terribly simple. It is one of these idiotically elementary factors that everybody could have overlooked forever. They would have had to have overlooked it. They didn't even dare tread on the edges of it for fear everything would blow up or disappear. All right. A Thetan makes something. And because he himself, natively, is a static, capable of consideration, has no mass, no form. As a spirit, he has no form, he has no mass, he has no wavelength. He only has potentials, potentials of locating objects in space, and the potentials of creating space, energy, and objects, and the action of locating those objects in that space. And with this as his potential, the moment that he makes something, he violates his own communication formula. Now, a Thetan in excellent condition is able to communicate easily with something. He can simply change his mind about this and work it around. But the formula of communication becomes native to the creation of space, energy, and mass. And that formula is, of course, cause, distance, effect, with a perfect duplication taking place at effect of that which emanated from cause. Now, that is the communication formula. And that becomes the formula the moment you have space. Up until that time, you have all cause and all effect capable of occupying exactly the same location since there is no location. So a Thetan is perfectly able, way up the scale, in order to occupy the space of anything and so duplicate that thing. But his formula, when he's doing this, is not cause, distance, effect. This is cause, effect. That'd be the formula he'd be operating with, because he wouldn't communicate across a distance to something, since he wouldn't be occupying any cause or effect points. But he can't have a game if he does this. He can't have mass if he does this. If every time he selects out an enemy and then communicates to the enemy and simply becomes the enemy at that point, he couldn't have an enemy very long, could he? If he said, "Oh, I am fully responsible for everything and I will now make a plot of land," and he marks up some space and a plot of land and he's fully responsible for it, and what happens? It's gone. He marks it up, it's gone. All right. If he marked it up and altered it or changed it, he could then bring about the phenomenon of persistence, which is itself time. When you say survive, you're saying time. Just put those two together and make them synonyms, and you understand all you want to know about time. It's a consideration which leads to the persistence of something. And you can enter all the mechanics into time that you want to, and you can paint it up in any way you want to, and you can write textbooks on it and test it and buy very fancy watches and chronometers and set up observatories to measure the movement of the stars, and you still have time is a consideration which brings about persistence. And the mechanics of bringing about that persistence is by alteration. And so we have alter-isness taking place immediately after an as-isness is created, and so we get persistence. In other words, we have to change the location of a particle in space.
You see? We have to alter position. That's the first thing. And so we get time as the co-action of particles. Time is the difference of two positions in space of the same particle. All right, there can be many ways that we could go about that, but we're mainly interested in how it's done in this universe and how a thetan quite ordinarily does this. He has to change the position of something in order to make it survive. If he wants something to vanish, he will have to approximate it. In other words, he'll have to make a perfect duplicate of it, use its energy in its space, in its location, and at its time in order to cause a vanishment of it. Well, therefore, his whole responsibility cannot continue the moment he moves something. And after he goes on for a slight distance with this, then he must conceive, in order to get an automatic response, that it is that thing that is moving under another responsibility. Otherwise, he'll have to stay right there and move it. But if he says it's moving under another responsibility, therefore he can set up an automaticity which will continue its motion. So he has something persisting. This is elementary. This is elementary in terms of time, in terms of space. But every time that we say persistence, we say survive, and so on, we're just simply saying time. Time is a continuum. A continuum of what? A continuous motion of particles. Now, here's something very peculiar. When an individual tries to unmock himself, when he becomes very unhappy of life and so on, he will hold himself still. When he tries to unmock things, he will try to hold them still. His idea is that if he can just reassume this basic motionlessness, then all of his troubles will disappear. He has so long practiced alter-isness. You see, he's so persistent on the subject of persistence that he doesn't hold himself still at the first instant of his creation of mass. You see, he doesn't take that postulate into effect. He doesn't use that postulate. What he does is declare that something has other responsibility than himself, and then he tries to hold this thing still, and in such a wise it'll disappear.
Now let's get back to this communication formula. A perfect duplication would be cause and space, cause and effect in the same point in space, wouldn't it? So communication, as we consider it through space, is not a perfect communication system. You, on one point in space, communicate with something at another point in space. And if you continue to interpose a distance in between the things, or space in between the things, you get even then the basic of persistence. You see, all you've got to do is get that distance in there, and now we have this taking place. A thetan cannot duplicate a mass, so every time, that is to say, he cannot himself actually be a mass. He can conceive that he is by saying, "Now look at all this mass which somebody else put on me." You see, I didn't create this mass, and so forth. Well, then he can conceive himself as mass. But he starts to get very unhappy about communicating with somethingnesses, because he has this distance factor, and he is a nothingness. Now, if he can be the somethingness on the same point in space where that exists, then he feels very, very good about things. You see that? He feels all right. Simply because he's occupying the same space. Well, that's perfect communication for him. That's a perfect duplicate. But if he totally occupied it at its instant of inception, it would disappear. So he gets caught between not wanting to communicate with something and wanting to have something. You see, to really have something, he'd have to occupy the same space. Communicate with something, he has to stand off at a distance and pretend that he is something. Communication, as we know it, for instance, in this universe, is cause distance effect. Perfect communication, like a perfect duplication, is the point. The point. There's something on this point, and the Thetan can also occupy this point. Therefore, he can have something, and he can communicate with something. But if he says it belongs utterly to him, and he's occupying its basic point, it'll disappear. You see that? He has to have another creator. He has to have some other author of the universe. If he doesn't have, why, it'll disappear. Now, we could inquire at some length, I suppose, into the tremendous complexity of this, and why is this? Thetan should simply be able to say by postulate, well, it's as it is, and it's going to persist as it is, and we'll just make this postulate, and that'll be that. But the funny part of it is it doesn't work this way, and it looks here like we have an arbitrary which has been entered in from some quarter or another, which we don't fully comprehend even at this moment. But this universe went together on the basis of as if equals vanishment. See? As isness is vanishment. You make one just as it is. All you have to do is pretend as if you were making it at this moment. You see? And boom, it's gone. Now, you see then the necessity, at least in this universe, to have another determinism at work. Well, that's just one point. We see it in terms then of the creator. That's fine. This does not enter the question of whether or not there is or is not a God. We're just talking about whether or not people blame God, or why they blame God, or why they put things onto God. Well, if they didn't, they wouldn't have anything. Now, the other point involved here are people blaming each other. They stand there, and one says, you said that, and that's your fault, and this is why we had this fight, and so forth. And the other person said, no, that wasn't the way it is. It's an entirely different situation, and you actually were the one that started all this. And we get them talking back and forth. We talk to a preclear. We want to know what's wrong with this preclear. Well, it's what Mother did to him, not what he did to himself. And yet we can't conceive, actually, that an individual could actually become aberrated without his own consent. And sure enough, he can't. He can't become aberrated or upset or thin or lean or fat or thick or stupid or anything else without his own consent, because he is part of the agreement pattern. Unless he has agreed himself to other entities of agreement, why, he can't get stuck with any kind of a pattern. Now, let's look at how that adds up. We find out that if an individual... to have something, went into agreement with other determinisms and said these other determinisms caused all this, why, then, you see, he could sit there comfortably with something persisting. But what did he have to do, basically? He said, in order to have anything, I've got to go into communication with these other determinisms and blame them, or fix the responsibility of causation upon these others. So the child blames his parents. He gets up into the age of puberty. He runs into sex. Sex tells him he can't survive. That's the basic manifestation of sex. Tells him he can't survive, and he begins to worry about this fact. Why, here he is, all equipped to make another generation. He's hardly started living this one. And that's a confusing and upsetting fact. And looky here, I'm already being warned in advance that someday I'm going to die. If you ever want to see anybody morbid or read any morbid poetry or anything of the sort, why, you should just dive right into the teenage. You never saw such complete sadness on any subject. Well, they've been told they can die, and the appearance of sex physiologically told them they can die. All right. They become anxious then about surviving, so they have to turn around and blame somebody for something, anything. Simply by blaming somebody, they obtain a continuance of whatever condition they are in at the moment. In other words, they can continue to survive simply by turning around and saying, well, the trouble with me is all what my father and mother did to me. Then they can get more survival. So if you were to take somebody and bring him very, very close to death and cause the chilly breath to draft down his neck, you will find him very shortly blaming something else than himself. But he runs in a cycle on this. He discovers that the situation is untenable. Well, then he'll blame himself. Why does he blame himself at that point? He wants to unmock it. And he actually has forgotten the mechanisms of unmocking. By blaming himself, by taking it upon himself, by holding it all close to his own bosom, he thinks, now that it's my fault, why, it'll all unmock. And he's a very surprised person when it doesn't unmock. He merely gets upset. And the other one is, he finds his condition of survival desirable, and when he finds it even vaguely desirable, it don't care if he's a slave in the bottom of a salt mine, working out a sentence for having voted. Fact is that this individual obtains continuance by blaming others. So we go through a cycle of blame somebody else. That means I've got to, or I want to, or I haven't any other choice but to survive, and the best answer is survive, so therefore I'll just blame everybody else. And the mechanism of blaming oneself is unmocking oneself. Unmocking oneself in the mass with which he is immediately and intimately surrounded. So people go through these two cycles, and they invert, and that is the basic inversion. They start in by saying, well, somebody else was responsible for the creation of all this. They're quite happy about this, and they stand off and look at it. And then they begin to get tired of communicating with these somethingnesses because they cannot enter into a perfect duplication. They are a nothing, that's a something. They begin to get impatient about it after a while, so they decide to unmock it. So they say, I did it, while they're looking at it. And they look at it, and they say, well, I did it. Well, there's something wrong here. Come on, come on, come on. I did it. Stuff goes right on. They don't fix it up in the same part of the space in which it was initially mocked up. They don't try to duplicate it with its original mass. They omit some of the basic steps of saying, I did it. And they're trying to go up against the postulate with which they did it. Now, having made this postulate and said already it belonged to somebody else, now they try to take it back. And their next move is to try to squash up these energy masses. You know, use more force in order to flatten force. And he is on his way, this Thetan, right away. See, he's on his way. Because the more he tries to use energy to knock out energy, the more energy he's going to have, and the more dislocated the basic particles of that energy are going to be, and he'll just get more and more and more and more persistence. And if he keeps on protesting all the way on down, it'll just become more solid and more solid and more solid and more solid. Because when he's protesting, he's saying it's other determinism. He protests by saying, it's my fault. Now I'm going to disappear and die, and that will make you sorry. You see? But again, he's entering a protest into the line. So we get this basic thing of other man's responsibilities, that God is responsible and so forth, as being the fundamental here in terms of persistence and survival. We have to have another determinism at work, or we get no persistence whatsoever. And so we get these postulated other determinisms. And when you recognize this very, very clearly in your pre-clear and in creation itself, it will cease to be as entirely baffling as it may have in the past. Okay.